start with an explanation of pay substitute for House Bill 26?
Sure. I have some material I'll pass out to you. Can you put the table somewhere?
Sure, why don't you come sit down?
Someone sit here? Delmar, how are you? Some material I'll pass out, which will show various organizations have been contacted concerning the bill. What the bill does is it provides that those organizations which, or corporations which presently have regional housing authorities could also establish regional electrical authorities. And there's approximately, let's see, 13, Marty Stokely Association, Bering Street Association, so on down the line, who could form regional housing authorities. The purpose of this is that there's a real need for rural electric, for improvement of the rural electricity, and it was brought to my attention by the Klickahida of Southeast Alaska. Many times in rural areas, there's not the management expertise, nor is there the maintenance expertise to maintain electrical facilities. This would allow the organization, would be a management tool whereby they could hire a person who is knowledgeable in electrical problems, also hire someone who has had the maintenance expertise to run electrical plants. Now, many of the small rural communities in Southeast, especially, if you look at the rural facilities, they're in very poor shape, and it's just a real wonder that they're even functioning, let alone that someone hasn't been severely injured by the poor upkeep and poor maintenance of these facilities. So that's what it does. It in no way obligates the state to anything. The last part of the bill, the last section of the bill on page 11, section 1871.10, indicates that the creditor state's not pledged. So what we're doing is setting up a nonprofit organization that can sell bonds and notes and also receive federal grants from REA and so on to establish, improve, and upgrade the electrical facilities. That's a general overview of the bill. Of course, it's a very extensive piece of legislation, and some of this is just more or less boilerplate language in it, but there may be some questions. A number of organizations were contacted, and I made up packets I can pass them around, the different organizations that have responded in their thoughts on the legislation, and I might add it's all been favorable as far as I can tell. Looking at the packet, we have the AVEC, Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. Although they didn't respond to the specific legislation, they did respond to Klickahida's attempt to solve the rural electrification problems. We have one from William Ryan, who is with the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, who is endorsing the proposal. Roger Lang, President of AFN. We need our Hendershot Commissioner, who is discussing endorsing their efforts to solve the problem. David A. Hamill from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, REA Administration, who endorses the concept. One from the Governor. A letter from John Borbridge, President of Sea Alaska. CCAP endorsing the bill. From Bill Flynn, Acting Area Director of BIA. There's a list there of who all was contacted, which is a wide, wide range of people who have seen the legislation. And there are a number of telegrams at the end from various regional corporations endorsing the concept and lending their support. At the present time, I think there's probably four organizations who presently have regional housing authorities, and they could go ahead and create regional electrical authorities. Klickahida organizations, I understand, is very well advanced on this concept and could get underway very shortly with favorable action. We do have, Mr. Chairman, a couple of representatives from Klickahida who really have the technical expertise that they can answer a lot of technical questions as to how this operation is performed. Robert Wilson, Executive Director, Bernie Hillman, Deputy Director.
We haven't had a chance to.
How does something like a Chugach Electric differ from your proposal here? I really don't understand the differences, and really why our current statutes don't allow people to start electric companies.
Okay, if I could, the current statute, the statute that we're amending, and perhaps Mr. Loker could answer this better, but the statute that we're speaking to here is the one concerning regional native corporations. They are, under present statute, they can create housing authorities. We're now amending that statute to also allow those corporations, 13, and I didn't install them, 13 or 14, to create electrical authorities, to establish electrical authorities. And this would be dealing directly with the rural areas. One thing I didn't mention is the committee substitute did make an amendment, and this may be some concern. Over on page 2, on line 16, there was the amendment where we added the words within the service area of a certificated rural electric cooperative. So we're protecting areas that are already served. Bob, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I could answer that question better.
Maybe I can join you.
This is Bob Oker.
Mr. Chairman, we have gotten started after working for about 3 years now in rural areas building housing. We discovered that we've got a lot of problems out there. We build modern housing, but there's not the adequate generation distribution facilities to service our houses, and we're creating an adverse impact in rural Alaska, and especially in Southeast, what I'm familiar with, because we're not adequately handling power of electrical generation distribution. The systems out there are virtually no systems. They need to be redone completely. As you probably noticed, Kodiak and Nome and Kuna and all these areas have appealed to the state and federal government for emergency status during the winter months. And continually to send Band-Aid money to them, $50,000 at a crack, $20,000 here, surplus generates, and that doesn't solve their problem. This last year, we looked at the problem of trying to modernize the systems. As you know, most of the systems are being run by the municipalities right now, or little IRA operations, which is under the federal Howard Wheeler Act, that set up a type of local government for Indian areas many years ago, 1950s. And they're not doing the job. And these systems are in deficit positions, and they're inadequate, as we've noted before. We got the idea, we did a feasibility study for our region for 5 communities this last year, funded by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and assisted by Community Regional Affairs of the state and the Tribal Council of Clayton Heights. We did about a 1,000-page study on our own communities to provide us a basis for figuring out where we're at and what we're going to do. And in this process, we got down to 2 or 3 recommendations, and those recommendations were, one, that we take a look at REA, 2% funding for rural area, rural electrification, it's under REA Act. And secondly, we take a hard look at the State Cooperative Act legislation adopted many years ago, and look at the municipal operations currently running the systems. And we had a little problem trying to merge municipal-run systems into cooperatives and vice versa. So we, upon an intensive look, we looked at the Cooperative Act and decided that thing was pretty archaic in its present format, and we didn't think too much of trying to work with it. We looked at the recently passed municipal code and saw a number of features in there which we found would be very good to have if we're trying to put an electrical program together. And then we took a hard look at the Intergovernmental Municipal Act, the state Intergovernmental Relations Act, which was adopted a few years ago, you probably remember that. And there were features there. We decided that we ought to take a look at drafting a piece of legislation to combine the best features of the cooperative and those features of the municipal corporation and try to develop an electrical power authority type concept to provide us a new instrument under the state authorization with which to handle electrical problems in rural Alaska. And the Tribal Council sponsored the legal fees to draft this bill, and we asked the Representative Duncan to introduce it this last year, and it's come out in this present format. The bill provides us the flexibility with which to handle getting 2% funds from REA, plus gives us the ability to seek revenues not in the immediate future, but somewhere down the road, through tax exempt securities, bonds, and notes, selling them ourselves if we're able to put packages together. As you know, rural packages now for electrical developments in Alaska have had little or any financial or assistance by anything other than REA, BIA, and little grants from the municipal program, what do you call it, revenue sharing.
We haven't had a chance to go over the bill in detail.
Okay.
We just came from the House, and Mr. Duncan is the best one we need to pass this legislation this session. And would you be available Thursday to go? And we'll have some technical.
No, sir. I won't be here Thursday, but I could be here next week, Monday or Tuesday.
Okay. There's a lot of technical matter in the bill, and I would like to have some more time. The committee would like to have some more time to go over it. And if we could meet Tuesday at 3 o'clock, would that meet your schedule?
Yeah, we might be able to do it then.
Our meeting will be short today because we'll have a quorum. There's a legislative council meeting.
Okay, well, fine.
But we would like the time to go over the bill in some detail and raise some questions that I'm sure you'll be wanting to comment on. If that would be agreeable with you. Very good. Thank
okay,
you.
Well, then we just wait till then.
That will give us the necessary time to work on. That gives
okay.
us a week to work on, and that will be sufficient.
Fine enough, then.
Thank you very much for coming.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Senator Curtula? I realize your time is limited.
Well, I really appreciate having me. Sorry that I wasn't here the other day.
I'd like to bring Senate Bill 227 for you.
I don't think there's any 2% money left nationally, incidentally. It's about 8 now, more.
It's 2%.
Yeah, but you can't get any more, though. Nixon administration changed all that.
They changed many things.
I should say this just before my bill is up.
I might remind you that Joe's not going to vote no.
What was that avoided?
I'll just give you a quick background if you want on this.
We've had this bill up last meeting, and there was some testimony by Senator on it, and we thought you'd want to give some additional testimony on it.
Well, I appreciate being here, Mr. Chairman. Essentially, what we're trying to do is to prevent the misuse of land set aside by the borough for agricultural purposes, and I think there's a whole new interest in the farmlands for farming, the oxygen-producing lands for oxygen. It's been in the state's interest, I think it's more and more being considered by people think about that, to set aside lands for renewable resource development. And then not let them, because they have perhaps special protection, tax protections, and so on, maybe they're sold by the borough in this particular case at low interest, long-term, special considerations, not let somebody arbitrarily after a year or two or three, because he can change the politics of the local governing authority, and this can happen and does happen, county governments in general corrupt all too often. I can't point to the state of Alaska as having that experience.
Not boroughs, just kind
of. But I'm fearful of
the record show.
I'm fearful of it. And the most recent example is in the Matanuska Valley, there is a borough ordinance passed. Subsequently, the borough ordinance was wiped out. Now there's another ordinance being proposed on land disposition for agricultural purpose. Pretty tight ordinance, boilerplated quite well. It gives great preference for land for agricultural purposes, but I'm afraid that people will acquire land for agricultural purposes and in a period of time convert them to other purpose. And the politics of doing this is not all that difficult when you've got your relatives and friends and neighbors serving on the borough assemblies. I'll point just one gross example to you. A person in the borough area of Matt Subaru, in the process of selling his farm. Nonetheless, because he owns farmland, qualifies for purchase of land in the needed area, a special preference for agricultural purposes. So he sells his farmland for real estate, converts the other land theoretically to farmland. You remit loss of the original farm for farm purposes, which is all about one. Two, I think that individual won't have any great problem in 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years of effort converting the land he acquired for new agricultural development to real estate. I want to prevent that, and I don't think a borough ordinance is sufficient boilerplate to prevent it, no matter how well intentioned. The borough can lease lands, long-term lease, for a particular purpose. They could perhaps sell lands, reserving subdivision rights or reserving certain rights, or they can do what they want now, sell the land for agricultural purpose. All of these may be desirable, but I think it needs a boilerplate state statute to back it up. I haven't studied constitutionality, but I had Machowski draft a bill after discussions such as ours. That's what you have before you. I got it. The land set aside for agriculture should take an act of the legislature to remember the land was granted to the boroughs for the support of the boroughs, and nobody should deny it in this regard. And that's what the whole thing's about. Perhaps it could be better worded, although I think Machowski is a pretty competent guy, knows the area fairly well, and. That's what I mean to say. That's all I mean to say.
Senator Tulloch, I believe Mr. Dozier has several questions with regards to the bill.
Would you care to come up here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I might just...
Would you like to come up the table?
Reiterate again one solution, I think, to Mr. Tulloch's problem here that would put a definite, perhaps a definite control that he's looking for on this would be that the assembly could retain the development rights on any property disposed of by deed, contract, lease, or other instrument, which shall include, among other items, appropriate conditions and limitations which may be required by law, or which the assembly may elect to include for enforcement of the conditions and limitations as defined in the instrument by the appropriate legal means. And then, when in the best interest of the governing body, the property should be developed for higher use, the development rights may be sold with first option to the owner holding a limited use or conservation deed, or subsequently to the higher bidder at public auction. A limited use only for farm use purposes. The development rights may be then exercised, cannot be exercised until a limited use easement deed is purchased from its original owner. The owner of the limited use easement land is assessed on the basis of the full and true value of the ownership rights to the land held by him in fee ownership, plus the value of any buildings or improvements. The value of the development rights held by the municipality are exempt from taxation until they are sold, at which time the municipality relinquishes all claim to the land and the total value of the property is entered on the assessment roll. One of the things I think in the bill says that the assembly may not by subsequent action waive or abrogate the condition and shall provide for enforcement by appropriate legal means. This is very difficult to enforce, and another condition would be that if the municipality, shall we say, in the best interest of the municipality and the state and all, that the area that has been deeded is ripe for development and should be developed, then there's the municipality really has no control over this at all. And this is one of the instruments, the way that I have presented it, that would give the municipality the right to have a land use control of at least that property that they've acquired through various means. It's just one added way that it could be done, and as I'm presenting.
Rights, including subdivision rights. Well, unfortunately, what I'm getting at is the conversion by way in advance of the needed time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A situation that I know is going to occur in my borough. I just just smell it. And I think that the state law on this subject, they'll be goddamn careful. They set aside agricultural lands that they know they can't subsequently change them, one. And those lands that the highest best use are agriculture. By God, I think it's in the state's interest, since the state actually gave the boroughs the land to begin with, it's the state's interest to retain them as agriculture unless the state sees fit to change it. Now, there might be a compromise reached here, but I certainly don't want the borough assembly of 1 year to pass an ordinance 3 years later. Now, they get into a land grab situation. Now, gentlemen, it's like the fellow said going up the stream, you know, I'm not going to be the first one up there poaching fish, but I'm never going to be the third. And that's my way, too, see. Now, if this continues, I'm going to be in there grabbing with everybody else. And that isn't what we want, and that's wrong. It's just like misuse of present state lands in the one-year program. We have a bill in now that changes at least 30 years. Get land for agriculture, hold it a year in a subdivision. Homer's got a situation right now. And that's what I want to get away from. And the local government pressures are so great, they can't withstand them at the borough assembly. You should see the pressures that were put on the local borough assembly in the process of enacting this ordinance. There's all kinds of devious SOBs there. Working, hustling, shirt-tail relations. And guys are under terrible pressures there, and they can't withstand them at that it's not the farm's length, you know, it's right close in. And I think Ed can understand a little bit, since we're serving so long, what we might be talking about. God, those pressures are great. And friends and neighbors and family involved, they steal. That's what they end up doing.
Mr. Chairman, I concur with Senator Katula's problem there, and I fully support them. I wonder though, if we pass this, if it's not so strict that the borough assembly will say, well, we don't want to tie up that land forever, because Mr. Joseph Brown, sometime in the future, in fact, it may be in the best interest of all concerned to have that land develop, and so they'll say, rather than keeping it for agriculture, they say, well, we're not going to classify it as agriculture. And not ever do it because there's too many teeth.
It's a good argument. However, there's great pressure on right now in my area, and I realize that right now I'm the area that's hot under fire, but we've got the Great Sisseton Valley, you see, in there, and that's one of the heartlands.
I agree.
Immediate agriculture development, because the sales potential, the greater Anchorage area, is close in, plus the climate and soils. If setting aside, your position is well taken, except that there's great pressure on by a group of people, considerable group now, to get agricultural lands. And I don't think that pressure can be withstood by the borough assembly. We'll give them agricultural lands, and if we bulwark it, I don't think it's going to stop them from putting it out at agricultural lands. All we're going to do is expose them, some of the bitches that wanted it for some other purpose. Assembly, in my opinion, should welcome this as an assist to them. I know there's some people who say, hey, you give local governments responsibilities, it should have them. But we gave them 10% of the land mass. And anything I can see in the present ordinances and present efforts, unless they're guaranteed, are a giveaway, you see. And I don't know how to control it other than to say, hey, the ordinance under which you bought it shall hold until the legislature changes it. Now maybe there's another method. Maybe you can put a term of time. Will hold for 30 years until the legislature changes it, one or the two. But I'm not certain. But in any event, it's a bad situation, and it's motherhood, and it's everything else, and unscrupulous people, as well as good, honest, upright citizens are involved in it. Some for the right reasons, some for the wrong reasons. And I know quite a bit about it. And I have raised hell locally. I mean, this is the seeds of, you're getting kicked out of office when you start getting this kind of stuff in local government. But I just say, hey, you want it for farming, you son of a bitches? You want special tax advantages, special purchase advantages? All right, fine. Only then it's going to stay for farming. you ain't gonna have the best of both worlds, boys. And that's, you know, that's the story. And they may take more work, more effort. And maybe a time frame is the thing, you know, to offset partly what you say. At least for the following 20 years, it can't be changed without legislative action or something. I hate to bring the problem to the legislature, but after all, the legislature created the borough and created the problems. It created problems for Ed when they created the special borough he's now involved in. And God knows, Dozier certainly knows what I'm talking about, so they must have some of the fears he's expressed previously in special farm tax programs, which I helped close the gap on last year. And I know I'm speaking a bit more emotionally than logically or rationally, maybe, even on the subject, but I am telling you what I smell. And unfortunately, I smell it in the best land in the state, probably the most available for agriculture development, and among the people most pressured to retain agriculture in given areas. It really worries me that I hope the government changes the deal and build the stream.
Senator, do you have a comment?
Hi. Pull myself up the chair. I'm Kevin Waring, Director of the Division of Community Planning, Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and one of your staff members called me this morning and asked me to look at this legislation and bring whatever wisdom I might have. I think I have similar strong feelings too about the issue that the Senator is addressing. Matsubaro, very right in anticipating those kind of pressures, and you know, they have occurred. It's very visible. Questions come to mind about the very last part of the bill, and both the effect of legislation that would restrict in perpetuity, effectively, the use of land as agricultural, and the very, very strict forfeiture provisions. I think. For the sake of effective legislation, the considerations that the Senator has just been speaking of, that is the difficulty in putting on a agricultural restrictions without restricting it to agricultural use without term, might prove in the end a difficult feature. I'll point out, for example, once upon a time, Lower Manhattan, where there are 60 and 70 story buildings, was once farmland. We may never see that in the borough. But I think you have to expect that land uses over time can change, and what is appropriate at the moment might not be at a later date. But even more difficult than that, I think, is the forfeiture provision. I think the courts have generally been reluctant to enforce forfeiture provisions where they ran with covenants or restrictions on the use of land. They're actually generally, when there's a feeling that perhaps restricted uses are no longer so inappropriate, generally reluctance to take such a radical step as to deprive a property purchaser of his ownership rights. I think perhaps this other notion of authorizing or requiring perhaps the borough assemblies to convey a limited interest, perhaps just agricultural development rights or some other restrictions for a term of time for reconsideration, say for a term of 10 years or 15 years, might be both protection against inaction on the part of courts to enforce restrictions against people who would use agriculturally classified land for other purposes, and also allow over reasonable periods of time, some accommodation for changing land use patterns. It is very difficult, I think, to anticipate now, and as I say, in the future, but land to act with assurance that lands that are now suitable for agriculture will and will remain best used for whatever kind of land. I do think, though, that the bill addresses what is a real problem, I'm sure. Planning in the borough, Matsu borough, and other areas, and aims at coming up with some tools to help local governments keep in agricultural use lands that are best suited for that purpose. And I think the committee would take a very helpful step toward getting local governments and planning departments in enacting legislation that would would serve to strengthen their.
I can understand what Senator Couture was talking about, the pressures that can be brought to bear, you know, at the local level. Also, understand his feelings for wanting to protect an asset for future generations. I mean, look at Southern California, screwed up, you might say, the land of oranges. Now, you know, they let that go by the board. Many other areas, they didn't really plan to protect, you know, their agriculture. Would it have any merit to consider, you know, taking into consideration future and trends rather than perpetuity? Oh, I can't pronounce that word, but
thank you,
Mr. Chairman. But maybe either the assembly or a group could come and petition maybe the local boundary commission or something like that. Would take it out of the local hands. It would be a state agency, and then with the same appeal rights that we have on annexations and whatnot. In other words, they would look into it. Then it would still come to the legislature, you know, on a 45-day provision. So, you know, it would take it out of the group that could be most pressured. You know, the fears that Senator Couture has might be addressed through this one. I don't know.
Sure. Any mechanism that removes the opportunity on a one-night's meeting to change the whole goddamn program. Now, remember, the state's interests lie in, among other things, under the support of the school programs. As you know, the local government's contribution is ever less for agricultural lands than it is for higher and better use, theoretically, if in case there is such a thing. And frankly, we have a vested interest in something like this as a state. That's another reason why we should take an interest in making certain that there is no exploitation of this
Senator Couture
present situation before any legislation is enacted.
With regard to the time limit, I have personally no trouble with the perpetuity clause. However, it might be wise to think about a 20-year limitation from the time of classification, if that's the wise course. I'm not sure.
Remember, the borough ordinances may well, since we're just bulwarking the borough ordinances, I think the borough ordinances may have a time limit within them, too. I can't say the present one. It seems to me there's a 20-year time limit on that super ordinance. So this would back that up, and in 20 years, that should be off. But of course, I am very much of the opinion that it should be held forever, and every person that doesn't come here is an asset to us. I don't want anybody to go, but I buy the Tillium position, which is a reactionary one, I guess. Anyway, I'm full concurrence with it.
Yeah, I wouldn't give on it, except if you had to give on it on the floor to get it passed.
With regard to the, I just support my position. With regard to the forfeiture clause, perhaps we could arrange that. I do worry about that provision. The courts are loath to require forfeiture.
I think you can word it better. All right. I think give it a better bulwark and one that won't be challenged in the courts and one won't then be set aside. I think they're making a good point.
Perhaps we could
tarred, feathered, shot, any of those things.
Perhaps we could include the provision that any deed or conveyance is null and void that seeks transfer's interest. This would accomplish in a somewhat more reasonable manner than tarred and feathered. Did you wish to speak on tarred and feathered?
No, I have no objection to target feathering, you know, castrating or any other methods of reasonable punishment. But I think you could strike out right on line 17, right after appropriate legal means. And
there are appropriate legal means, the same as when somebody attempts to build something.
If you want to.
Without a building permit or, you know, or in addition to it, there are appropriate legal means that you can approach somebody and stop them. And I don't really think that you have to specify here because times do change.
I kind of like the approach, Senator Tillian, if I might, Mr. Chairman. I do like the chairman's approach in that maybe appropriate legal means, including but not limited to other methods, perhaps not forfeiture, but the suggestion that's under it. I'd like to have some of the legal means included right in the basis of the act. Here, the court won't hold what appropriate legal means are to be used.
Senator Tula, we could possibly
maybe leave it open.
Amend the act to provide that a conveyance be null and void or other appropriate legal means. Any conveyance in.
I'd be happy to have it to make sense to you.
Yes.
Well, the reason I don't really think a minor one like that is that necessary, but the reason that I would strike that out is you might very well lose the whole thing in courts because who is going to forfeit? You know, the courts aren't going to take somebody's land away because he allowed his son to build a house on it in violation of the, you know, that wasn't agriculture. They might very well support a real substantial fine and the demand that the house be torn down. And I'd say if you had, including not limited to the right to demand any non-agricultural improvements be removed from the land, which had the owner's expense.
You could define the legal means, perhaps a legislative intent letter too, if you want to put it in the bill.
Extreme legal difficulties when you limit the power of alienation of real property, it goes back to the Misty Forests of England. Courts have almost had uniformly refused. It has to be worded rather artfully to.
Well,
this whole area of law is
yeah. Bulwark it with your legal knowledge, man.
We don't want to lose it. In fact, if anything that I would change to where once the borough assigned, you know, the borough had to do it if it was on the United States agricultural maps, you know.
Well, boy, I've had a hell of a blow up my borough, and it's just coming all over. I see those boys in the land pressures, and they don't want to pay for it. And they don't want to pay the interest rates, and they want it something for nothing.
Well, I've watched.
We find taxpayers' associations proponing in support of this sort of thing. And of course, they're really defeating an tax equity, is what they're going about, by virtue of the fact that they're getting something less than value at less interest rates and so on, and then going to convert. All the phonies are involved in this, along with some real good people, you know, who are conned along.
So one of the other problems in talking to people and farmers in Jay's area, the farmers themselves may want to use it for 30 years, but then want to use it for their retirement, you know, and sell it to the subdivider when they're ready to head south to the nice warm country for retirement. And so ultimately you still lose it. Actually, the more I think about it, the more maybe just
they buy it with a condition for farming. That's the only right they should have. They should be allowed to sell for farming.
I agree. This is pretty well all land. Vermont's done this, you know, and it's worked very well.
This has been a problem in Alaska that people upon retiring to the lower 48 will, you know, convert what they might have here to some commercial interest that's to degradation of the whole state.
Jake, when they are they classifying when a guy buys 160 acres or so, and there's some area that by soil conditions that are not suitable within that 160 acres, even though most of it is, are they exempting, say, the unsuitable portion from the farm tax break and just using the tax break on the rest of the agriculturally developable land, or is it the whole 160 acres?
It's in flux. As far as the agricultural tax thing, they've restricted it to the area just being farmed in some cases much broader because a guy runs one cow for 160, you understand?
Yeah.
Various ways of getting around it. The borough itself's been very concerned. In fact, they've been working with Dozier, and I've been bumping on Dozier on the new tax law that we've written. because I always felt that it had much more in common with what he's always been talking about, far more equitable for the other property owners, and that they have to pay back the difference if they convert, at least, that is within a period of years. The borough, in some cases, has said, you know, under the old 25% clause, that, you know, you're making your money off the greenhouse, that entitles you to 5 acres. But don't tire into the next 300. And they've had ups and downs and fights and battles back and forth on this. There's no consistent policy still being developed. What you're saying, and you know, those rules of thumb would come in. A guy had a totally usable piece of property, he might pasture the unusable sections for, it would be unusable for tillage. So he might, one guy might well have a total farm. Another guy might just farm this flat land and all the rest of it he's sitting aside for a nice view subdivision. Who knows? It's a tough one to administer. One thing in the land sales under the provisions of the new borough ordinance being proposed, it wouldn't come to grips with that. The guy got a piece of tough hillside back with his property or next to it or in the vicinity of it because he was farming. He may never have to use it for anything. It may not be farmable except to run a few head of beef cattle on. He's there for view property subdivision 10 years from now, more than likely.
Mr. Waring, I believe you have a comment.
Oh, yeah, another thought that occurred to me, probably one better evaluated by someone with more knowledge of land law than I was wondering, the legislation and the variations that you're talking about as they read, authorize the assembly to provide for enforcement. I wonder if covenant tools or other conveyance tools couldn't be used in a fashion that allowed citizens of the borough, other than just the borough assembly, to seek enforcement through, you know, the courts of any departure from agricultural use, so that it wouldn't simply rely on the assembly and their optional decision to seek or not seek enforcement, but that any citizen could.
Their tax bases, there could be a cause of action created for the conversion of agricultural.
Well, I want to smoke it all out. Man, I think this is the beginning. The problem's going to be borough-wide in every borough that's got any lands. There's a lot of interest in food production among the users, eaters, people that eat that now. We had a green thumb interest in the very early days of legislature. For the next decade, very little, because it was very urban-oriented there. We were concerned about native land claims or some other thing that was occupying a great deal of time. Now, people are reading their books, 1975 and famine, and they're beginning to see food prices go up, and all of a sudden they're wondering, why should we have all of this land under cement? Hence, you can really get steamrolling through a borough assembly, some of these little ordinances, which you're not looking up the street to see how they're going to be enforced. You know, they're really methods of stealing land for other use by some unscrupulous individuals.
Yeah, well, in many cases, what people haven't understood, for instance, in the Orange County episode there in California, there's some that point out, well, California still raises more oranges than they did in the heyday of Orange County. The difference being that Orange County had enough natural rainfall that it didn't require all the irrigation, or a lower amount, and that a bushel of oranges now has up to a gallon and a half of gasoline or its equivalent in it, where it used to have just about a half to three quarters of a gallon. And that's a major loss to the whole nation. And so, yeah, you can make things grow on the side hill, but you've got to have a lot more artificial stuff, and all that means you've got to use up another natural resource, and that's something that the world can't afford to do just because.
Well, we're putting more energy into food than the food energy comes out. There's a real net waste of energy in production.
I think the committee feels very strongly about this. I will talk with Mr. Maciowski and see if we can have a committee substitute to improve the stand of the committee and then back to the committee.
I'm very pleased to be able to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for coming in today.
Well, we're going to try and get it out fairly soon, I think.
Yes.
And I was looking at some language.
Any comments you may have with regard to drafting, I appreciate it.
But do you want them now, or?
That's after the meeting, if you have a chance to draft them, or if you'd like to present the other things.
Well, I was just going to try it out, you know, on this line 17, appropriate legal means, including but not limited to the requirement that all improvements placed on the land in violation of the agreement of purchase be removed at the owner's expense. Now, that won't do if the guy has built a gravel pit and sold the topsoil away. And that's just one of the
you might put in there in restoration of destruction for agricultural use. It's not really gonna go fall on some tops or else. Do a lot of thinking before it gets to the out.
Okay, that's good. Now you're gonna have
to test it. You have a sheet with that language on it.
And if you want to add more about the restoration, that wouldn't be too bad.
Let me talk to Greg about this. See, I'd like as strong a clause as possible. I as a creature that.
And I'm ready to sign it out due pass at any time now or in.
I'd like to do that. No, I feel the same way. I'd like to get it out.
Yeah, I don't see any reason to hold this up for a length of time.
No, only that the Mattsu borough did another 4-hour referendum on the problem up there after that. And they still didn't come in settlement. They're still trying to find a handle to I think any assistance is yet at this limit. They're looking for all the assistance.
Ours will have more teeth than a shark, I suspect.
And this is just one step. We're going to be biting off other chunks.
It's fractionalized up there into a lot of elements right now. A lot of pressure being put on there.
How much development pressure is there from?
Well, you really don't know because, these different factions, occur at these hearings, and you really don't know who they're truly representing sometimes, whether they're actually representing some true agricultural interests. There's some secondary investment behind them. We get lots of secondhand rumors up there, third hand also.
You really smoke them out with this one.
This will smoke them out.
What about land that is already that they in the past they have declared as agricultural use,
but it's not there. Then you'll approach that through my green space, our green space one. It'll stuff that's already been deeded. This will pertain to that stuff that they have not yet deeded. We also want one that Jalmer is just finishing up the work. You should have pretty soon that we're putting in together that does this on for state land. Then you go that green space one that we're working on that allows people that own it privately to in effect zone themselves. And Mr. Doza's remarks on that one were good to the point that speculators might hold it back. So I'd suggest a change that says, you have to pay 10 years back taxes, but you have to pay it at today's assessment, whatever the assessed valuation is. At the time that you wish to put it back. So then you haven't really taken out the, but you sure make it awkward to put it back. And that covers the.
Mr. President, incidentally, in that regard, and I'll get out of here, but that is one method of, in fact, there's a higher and better use. You pay a tremendous amount of back taxes. A 70-story building will justify it, but it won't be just some dilettante incidental reason for converting. You've got to pay the cash back. At interest.
I share your feeling on that.
Yeah, at interest, at the assessed valuation, at the end of the 10 years, so that a guy can't be paying it off in past dollars, which is, now this won't, I don't think, necessarily please the assessors, but that wasn't, it will make sure that the.
Well, keeping Semper too that way.
And the local government doesn't get rooked. They have a major investment there, anytime one pulls it back into the swim. The borough's received its interest plus.
Do you have any additional comments on this?
The only question I have it on after this discussion is this state mandating that you're going to do this in perpetuity. Still think that there ought to be a limit if you think 30 years or say do it by an ordinance that cannot be for less than 30 years or something like that. And if the local assembly wants to do it for 50 years in perpetuity, they can't.
Or cost, Don, the thing is that if the pressure is high enough, this legislative body meets every year, and you're not putting it as the Constitution.
And they see about how much luck we have having some of these things changed or put through.
Probably.
Once they're there, it's awful hard to get them out, Senator. I just feel if you're going to do it, and I have no objection other than the fact I think that there ought to be some decision left up to the local government.
I understand your position.
You say 25, 30 years.
I understand your position. However, in the Mattsu Valley, there's really a total acreage of there isn't that much agricultural land that just received agricultural classification. Do you have the exact the percent of land in the?
No, I'm.
My familiarity with the area and my parents have that place.
Oh, I might say Mr. Howe is going to be here probably Thursday on another bill. The borough manager. And he would probably have answered that.
Well, there's a good deal, you know, it's not just there. There's a good deal in my area that hasn't been subdivided yet. And incidentally, our borough supports both the green space bill and this. Namely, they don't want to, we're having such an oil influx that we don't want them forcing a subdivision via their strength on the, you know, borough assembly in future years. It would be nice to kind of salt it away now while the assembly still was somewhat rural oriented.
No, that's my only suggestion on the bill, and as Senator Tillion says, I know that his borough supports particularly open, what do you call it, green space.
It doesn't require agricultural, it's just any piece of land that you don't want subdivided.
We'll leave Senate Bill 227, and I'll contact the Senate Affairs on that, and turn to Senate Bill 170, which is Senator Tillion's bill. And that's the Mr. Dillon, would you like to come up and sit at the table perhaps to the top of the committee?
Well, I think I've already expressed in my memos everything I wish to say on it.
Well, I'd like to ask a question.
I believe Senator Tillion has something to reply to.
I think before Mr. Tillion starts a question, I would feel that on the Senate bill, on this bill that we're discussing, Senate Bill 170, that if in the infinite wisdom of the committee that they feel that this bill is the thing that's going to do the control, have the controls that we want in this state, that there should be a provision in there that it will have some governments will be reimbursed for the revenue in the interim of the time required. Now, Mr. Tillion has said that there will be very few people that will want to tie up their property. Well, okay, then there's only a few. Then in his opinion, there's only a few, and there's a potential great number. If that provision was in, it wouldn't cost the state but only a little bit, and yet you would have that overriding control that the municipal government would not be restricted from their revenues. For instance, in the Mat-Su borough, which almost 50% of their tax base is from vacant, unimproved land. And also within Juneau borough, he's got it down to 2.5 acres. Well, this means that the person could buy up these beach lots and have a farm use assessment on them and hold them for until they can sell them for 5 years or so and pay up the back taxes, and they've got it made. I think there's several points to this bill that needs a lot of work on myself. And another part of it, that the farm use bill that we have now and we have under operation with the 10% meeting 10% of your income is completely null and void after this. It'll be, and this is one of the problems with continuity in our thinking. On that line, I have before Mr. Tillion and the rest of you, I have a memo here regarding a tax base study. And this study, because of all the bills and the relating to changing the whole concept of our taxation, should be studied very carefully. And as relation to future and present municipalities and the future of our state, and all these bills then should be come under this property tax base study, which would then be available for you same members of the second session to consider in light of the recommendations and then go from there. I feel that this is such a magnitude, this particular bill has such a magnitude effect that it should be studied in light of all the other exemption bills. As I pointed out, there's many of them here, as I've listed. relating to property exemptions and special use assessments and all the rest of it, that should be considered in light of where the state wants to go. And the commissioner took this memo up to the governor's office yesterday, and I don't know what they're going to do with it, but we feel that this thing, they should study all these in a real firm study before action is taken. Those are my main comments that I have about it.
Anything?
I naturally don't agree. We got through the House, almost got through the Senate last year. I have no intention of wishing to wait any longer. The one area that Bob pointed out that somebody could show a profit by only paying their back interest plus, or their back taxes plus interest, with the evaluation change, they might be playing at a much reduced assessment. And I feel this is a valid complaint, and the borough should show the profit on that assessed increase, and therefore I would recommend a change. I haven't got just the right wording yet. On page 2, line 3. The payment of the tax plus interest to be figured at the assessed valuation of the land at the time you wish to return it to other than this use. So that if the assessments have gone up 4 or 5 times in the 10-year period that a person has had it under here, or whatever period it is, because some of them might hold it for 30 or more, that the 10 years back taxes be the 10 years figured at the new assessed valuation plus interest, as if this had been held at that valuation for the last 10 years. This means that, as Jalmer said, if you're going to build a 17-story building, you can afford to do it, but you're not going to lightly just fiddle around with it. And it is in a method, really, of self-zoning. I don't think that the local government unit can really lose overall. The basic difference that Bob has is he feels that subdivisions and other uses bring revenue that offset the impact that number of people have in a political subdivision, and I don't. And we're not going to reconcile these two positions. The only thing I can say is take them to the floor and fight them out. Because if you've got one where you think that somebody could really cheat on it, I'm willing to look at it. I think this closes that loophole to where a person who has speculation in mind would be darn reluctant, considering that Smokey's place at Eagle River that went from $16,000 to $260,000, you'd have to keep in mind that he might be paying 10 years back taxes plus interest at $260,000 if the assessments jumped in that period that he held it. And therefore, your speculators would not be about to put their land in. But those that were not speculating and just wishing to farm their land or wishing to live on it would not be forced off the land by the pressures of the speculator. As far as I'm concerned, that covers it. We need a little hand from legislative affairs for that amendment if the committee wishes to adopt it.
I'm out of curiosity, Senator, how did Governor Hammond vote on this measure? A member of the Senate.
He wasn't a member of the Senate when I had it, but if you want to know, it won't get vetoed. That's what you
mean. That was the reason I missed it. Having not an acquaintance with the governor, I'm sure he'd be able to convince him.
I have talked this over with him, so it's not that strange. We talked it over before he ran for governor. I would, though the wording should be gone over by our legal staff, I would ask the committee that we be given permission to have that wording done. Would that do it, Joe?
Well, I had some of the same problems with it I had last year. something bothers me. I'm not really sure exactly why.
You finally ended up voting for it last year.
Yeah. I'm still not sure exactly what it is. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's the sort of the creation of almost a privileged class of people who through one reason or another have a large piece of land. And maybe it's the eventual public good that, you know, large estates be kept. I don't know, something about that I think is what bothers me.
Well, it doesn't pertain to my island, I might add. I have more than one dwelling on it. But somehow or another, I like the idea that there'll be a little bit of green moose pasture here and there. And I think that the overriding public good to have some of these areas is more than offsets the wish to subdivide. And also, I have that feeling that no person should be put off their land just because development has spread out to them.
It seems to me that in the Anchorage area, if we pass this, then a lot of people who are currently paying a high level of taxes because they have large pieces of land will have their taxes significantly lowered. This will reduce the income to the borough, which will have to be made up by everybody else, including me, with a little lot.
This we talked about, and I'll make room for the other man here in a minute. We talked about last year, but the thing you've got to remember is the person now having a piece like out in Sand Lake that would comply with this is going to think twice at the value that he can make if he doesn't do this. Many, you know, the ones that are holding it, figuring to sell half of it off at a later date, aren't going to make this available. And those that do, for instance, if you went up Indian Creek somewhere and zoned it all 5 acres through this method, I suspect that the value would go up, not down, because people would pay a tremendous price knowing that they can't get an over-proliferation of people in there. And so in some cases, it's not going to lower the value.
Do you think if many fair weather Alaskans would not take advantage of this? Would it be possible? Is that tremendously?
How about the Uncle Bear?
Did you wear?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, to speak on one additional aspect of the bill that the committee might want to consider, and that is the use of it really is a tool of public policy to limit development from are undeveloped or an agricultural use. There's a phenomenon, I guess, that occurs in growing areas, whether or not we like the fact that they're growing. And Anchorage, I think, is a good example. And it's, I guess, planners call it hopscotch development. Instead of having fairly steady growth and expansion of the community to adjacent areas as a community expands, there'll be areas that are omitted sometimes because they're not developable, sometimes because they're being withheld from development for a time. It's in cases where it's good land, but being withheld for private purposes, it's often unfortunate. The kind of development pattern it causes often adds to the cost of public services. That is, by leaving large vacant areas or even in a developed area, relatively small vacant areas, where utilities are extended or services are provided that bypass areas, is sometimes do add to the cost of providing services. And in terms of, say, a municipality's policies for development, it might be, in terms of public costs, more economic to encourage filling in vacant areas, to save fringe areas from premature development, because if growth is occurring, it'll occur in the vacant areas or it'll occur at the further reaches. What was on my mind was to suggest that possibly an additional provision land to be eligible for the benefits of this legislation, that is land and farm use or undeveloped land, should become eligible if it is consistent with the municipal or borough land use plan, so that say lands that were classified, you know, and the local land use plan for conservation or agricultural use or for the interim at least not developed, there'd be incentive to retain those lands in those classifications, where on the other hand there's lands that it might be advantageous to develop, that is in terms of the cost of services and the cost of, you know, a sound pattern of development. Continue the withholding of those lands from growth might not.
Mr. I've been disappointed in the action in my borough with regards to developmental land. They're just really in no position to offer any guidance on the question of a very sound land use plan. In fact, we don't have a comprehensive plan in the Great Anchorage area borough. Furthermore, the borough has always been under a great deal of pressure by people involved in development not to enter into this area. We have had hopscotch development, we have had bad development. It's impossible to get around my district at 5 o'clock because of the four developments that's been permitted. And fortunately, Senator Willis was one of the members of the borough assembly who always sat on the right side of issues, I found out. And unfortunately, I wish there had been more like him there. Too many times other members of the assembly were suited to the interest of developers. In the long run, the state's going to have to pay tremendous social cost and economic cost, I might add. Trying to straighten out traffic in Anchorage is a multi, you know, $1 million into the several hundreds of millions of dollars to try and solve our traffic problems. We could effectively take the whole state budget and not do it. I'm just not sure that short of meddling in rural affairs, which I don't, or city affairs, which I don't intend to do, that we can really accomplish what you suggest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's a legislative council meeting here in Monster Run about time.
I understand, Senator Tate. Your position is well known.
Yes, thank you.
And therefore, you can count my vote anytime you want.
It also, we have a lot of slipshod development in some areas. Houses and apartment houses that are sinking into the Muskeg and South Anchorage. Things that are nothing short of criminal.
You very much do, and I would not at all quarrel with the fact of those problems, and they're not only existing in Anchorage Borough. What bothers me is I'm afraid some aspects of this legislation may actually aggravate rather than resolve the problem. And in fact, it allows it the option of the developer rather than as a matter of local policy, where advantage shall be taken of this legislation. That is, it's the landowner who happens to have a favorably situated tract who will decide whether or not he will take advantage of the legislation, not the local government that will decide whether or not it is fit to public policy.
I doubt if any developer in his right mind would take advantage of this legislation, to tell you the truth.
Well, with the amendments that the senator is speaking of, I think give them second thoughts. That is the change in the retroactive payment of interest in foregone taxes. I don't know whether Senator Orsini as a planner too might want to comment on what he has seen in that aspect of, you know, the pattern, in addition to just the gross amount of land in particular uses, because it's the pattern, as I say, that is as important as the gross amount of land. As far as affecting the cost of public services, which is a matter of local and state.
Which is a very good point, Mr. Rasmussen. In a second, this will, I'm sure, get the borough's attention. Hopefully cause them to do a little more time with their planning and zoning. I don't wish to unnecessarily intervene in rural affairs. I do support self-determination. I think this will prompt them and place an incentive for them to devote more time to developmental planning. This is something that they haven't done in the past, for good reasons in some cases. Ames Borough's been a very rapidly growing borough, a young borough. Also, other boroughs in the state have the same development problems and origins. I think perhaps this bill would get their attention. Senator Orsini, you know.
Well, I get their attention. Yeah, I concur with what Kevin's saying. You know, we're liable to perpetuate a bad situation. Or good portions of a bad situation ought to be perpetuated. I don't know, I just, there's a lot of little things that sort of bother me about it, and it bothered me last year on it too. Certainly make it, I sure oppose making it mandatory that boroughs do this. As far as I can tell on this bill, it's mandatory. As you say, you'd like some local option. Well, I see that would be the minimum local option, I would think, that at least if you know, Clem's borough wants to do this, then maybe we should let them. But I suspect the Anchorage borough is going to oppose it, and I'm not sure that we should mandate that they do it simply because Clem's borough wants to. So that's certainly one, we can make it discretionary on the part of the borough rather than mandatory. Also, I think we ought to get a fiscal loan on this because the state is the one that reimburses all the lack of income or lack of property taxes.
Yeah. Not on this bill.
There is no reimbursement procedure. I
suggest
I go sign in. I believe this is suggestion is applicable that there should be a reimbursement procedure. It may be an imposition on local government. If it is, I think we should at least compensate for it.
Well, that makes it easier to do it, and then it makes it the state's burden to do it, to reimburse. Huh?
Like you do your senior citizens or your present farmers assessment.
No. But there's one of the reasons farm use hasn't been adopted or isn't costing the state as much as it might is because people aren't farming very much. But certainly a lot of people own vacant land, and all of a sudden you're going to have a very significant increase if the state is going to reimburse for that.
I wonder what the net effect will be with severe restrictions on tax exemption. I would be surprised if anyone other than someone who never plans to start using for developmental purposes would even think of doing, even those that never want to develop their land but do want to sell it when they retire and leave Alaska, would have serious doubt about this sort of legislation. It would take a very special type of individual to take advantage of it. An interesting thing may occur when some people mistakenly take advantage of it, and at some point in the future find out that
you can't sell it.
That you can't sell it.
Very true. It's an unknown factor as what who will take advantage of it, but it does leave quite a potential for especially speculators going up to where they think their new site of the capital might be, and they could hold it for a couple of years until it's done and then resell it again or something of that kind. But it's a if we put in that provision that the state will reimburse, then at least you're not going to mandate to the municipality that in one way you're giving revenue sharing and another way you're taking it away. So you negate the whole revenue sharing program. It doesn't seem quite fair to me.
I would think the reimbursement would be a very desirable feature of this.
And there's no doubt, Mr. Chairman, somebody's going to have to pay for it. Like Mr. Senator Orsini, or really you're filling up a special class. People who aren't going to have an equitable be taxed equally with somebody else. Someone's going to have to pick up the tax. I think the reimbursable thing from the state would certainly allay a lot of my fear for this bill. As glibly as it's introduced, you're going to have to realize that somebody's going to have to pick up the tab for that lower assessed valuation.
I realize.
No doubt about it.
It's an experimental program and one that. Other states are dipping their toe into it gently. Certain eastern states have more experience with it than we have. I think the ultimate end is desirable. And I don't believe that rapid development pays its own way. As you can see by the budget, we're paying for that rapid development out of our own pockets, and I don't think the taxpayers of Alaska particularly like it.
I agree.
Also, the reason that our land costs are so high is because of the vast amount of speculation that we're seeing in land, and much of it by outside capital. looking at corporations that hold land, with corporations that hold various, you know, various little land-related businesses and enterprises. He's one of the inevitable conclusion that Alaska don't own the land that they live on in large part. It's a serious problem. As for creating a special class of people, perhaps it does. And I'm not sure that that's undesirable. We're not trying to get a family council from Ireland. I think you'll find a large who don't want to be in a special class.
Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, it is an experimental idea. I think for that reason, as well as for others, that we ought to make it discretionary on the part of the borough, of a borough, rather than mandatory. If the Kenai borough really wants to do it, then I say let them do it and let them play with it, and we can then benefit the Anchorage sometime down the line wants to do it, then we'll benefit of whatever the stakes or whatever that the Kenai borough has done. We're probably getting, I hate to go jamming it down local government's throat when a particular local government may not want to do it. And also, in agreement with Kevin, granted that the Anchorage borough has been very deficient in not adopting a comprehensive plan, maybe what we ought to do is say you have to have a comprehensive plan before you can get in on the act here, especially if the state's going to be footing the bill. And there's really, I don't know, how many years has Anchorage been fooling around with that comprehensive plan? At least two or three that I know of.
Longer than that.
Longer than that.
Certainly.
They should have it this spring.
We should have a good experience in the government in the Anchorage area. Your comment?
I only have thought this one too, Chairman. I did it once, but I deserve my comment.
Well, Brady, how about you got a borough in your district? What do you got any feelings on this? Well, no, what about future boroughs?
I don't see any problem with that.
You also got a lot of undeveloped land up there.
That's right. That's my right. Do you have any drawings that you have to pass out yet?
We should talk. Katie, do we have the zoning in Game Refuge bill? Did that come in?
I don't know. I can double check.
Can you go check very quickly? And sure. I believe we can report that out today. It's an earnestness bill. We can go over here and report that out. It does basically the same thing.
Exactly the same, except it just substitutes Game Refuge for State Park.
Go on, I'll talk to
the Chiefs.
Is that all you're going to take? Yes. Yes, sir. Thank you for coming, John.
Thank you.
Thank you. Same thing. The state should have to
call me on your state. They want all back over tomorrow.
Say here.
What are you going to do tomorrow?
Now, why would you want to say anything?
Same reason why it's on state parks.
Only
prevent development that is not going to be consistent with the use of a park or a game range.
Frank, it wouldn't affect any refuges in your district. It would affect only those near Anchorage that already have some private land in them. I don't believe do any of the refuges in your area have private land in them?
Native land. No, I don't think they're in them. Or they might be.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Say,
near Anchorage where you have people who'd like to take advantage of the game records feature to the disadvantage of all the other people in Alaska.
I'd say if that's a privately owned piece of land, then the state game records would go like that.
But they can still zone on, you mean inside.
Then it's the local government would have the zoning authority over that.
This can be disapproved by a resolution of the legislature. So if it affected something in your area, I'm virtually certain that you could convince the legislature to pass a piece of legislation disapproving it if it was inevitable. I don't think it would ever happen in your district. Would you be willing to pass that out?
Yeah, I'll go with it.
It's a piece of
paper, though, Nora.
Sure.
For some reason, it seems like he's a busy day.
They're all busy, Frank.
That's about it, too. It's because you were running around making quorums.
Yeah.
People come in and grab Frank and over to a committee.
The committee scheduling has gone all to hell or something. It seemed like at the start of the session they were pretty well paced out so you could make them, but now.
It'll get worse.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Afraid you're right, Pat.
We still haven't hit the biggies yet. Wildlife Tyson.
Well, I wish we had some notes.
Did you want to run this up for report so I can get into the secretary this afternoon before she closes up?
They close at 4.
Do they? We'll do it in the morning then. There's no further business, and I hear a motion for adjournment. We'll adjourn.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I heard.